This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Two guests this week, two really excellent guests with just excellent conversations. I'm not overselling it. This was a really good podcast. First up, Mike Golic, the longtime ESPN staffer. He now works at a variety of places, including Westwood One Audio, Learfield, Meadowlark Media, where he does a podcast with John Wiener, Stu Gatz, and does also a hit on Peacock with Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. He's followed by Jay Glazer, the Fox NFL insider, and the author of Unbreakable, How I Turned My Depression and Anxiety into Motivation, and You Can Too. Really, just both really honest, interesting conversations. I'm not even going to preview at the top. I just want to get to it so you can enjoy it. First up is Mike Golic, followed by Jay Glazer on the Sports Media Podcast. All right, as I said at the top, Mike Golic is returning to this podcast. Let me give you, it's going to take a little bit of time to give you all Mike's jobs right now. So let's sit down, grab some coffee, and let me roll through this. He's currently working as a on-air analyst for the Learfield College Football Game of the Week. He does that with Kate Scott, who's been on this podcast as well, who's great. He is a Westwood One NFL analyst, just did the Bengals-Raiders game. We'll ask about that. I don't know if that was onside or not. He's working with Meadowlark, doing weekly hits with Stu Gatz on the Stupidity podcast. I hope I'm pronouncing that
Stupidity.
Right. Stupidity. Stupidity. Yeah. Stupidity. Yeah. Sure. My apologies. I should listen. As well as the God Bless Football podcast. And he's also doing a weekly hit on Peacock with Mike Florio, PFT with Mike Florio. Obviously, you know Mike Golic from all his years at ESPN. Pleased to be joined once again by Mike Golic. Mike, welcome back to the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks, Richard. I appreciate it. And yeah, that sounds like a lot, doesn't it? It used to be so easy, just, you know, ESPN and that was it. And now I have all these titles, which won't be the same next year. I don't think I'm gonna bite off this much again.
All right, we'll get into that. Well, Mike, the last time you were on this podcast, it seems people were interested. There are quite a few downloads for that one, and I appreciate your honesty. So let's start here. It's been 12 months now, about 12 months since you left ESPN when you spoke to me in the summer, and we did a pretty long forum on sort of just your career and what had happened there at the end and what you hope to do. And so I was curious, now that we're into 2022, you're a year since you left ESPN, you're about 5 months since I last talked to you. How do you feel about where you are today and leaving ESPN sort of 12 months past, as opposed to maybe when I talked to you like 5 months ago or something?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, obviously the further you get away from something, and as long as you're doing something else, I mean, had I come on and you said Golic's doing nothing, I probably would be hoping I was still doing that or wishing I still was. I still miss it. Listen, I'm not going to lie. I loved doing the morning show. I miss that outlet of talking every day. And in all honesty, the last 3 years as part of with Trey, but with part of working with my son, I mean, nothing beat that in all the years I've been working. So that still stays. So it's nice to listen to him and Chris Canty every day. But you know, it's kind of like I had said, you know, when I got cut from one football team and went to the next, once I go to the next team, I don't keep asking about the old team. You know, you move on, you know, and I was fortunate enough to have some opportunities. And I basically took a lot of them for this year to see what I wanted to really kind of maybe hone in on going forward for the next few years. I won't, what you read, I won't do all that again. I was really busy. It was a lot of, you know, doing two football games a week and podcasts and such. It got going. But it was fun to be busy, especially now during football season. So I'm looking for what I like to do. Do I miss the talk show? Yes. Do I miss getting up at 4:15 in the morning? No. So there's that trade-off as well. I just actually filled in here in Arizona with my first, partner in Bruce Jacobs.
I saw that.
Yeah. And it was so funny because he texts me and said, hey, can Dale Hellestray, who played for the Cowboys when I was with the Eagles, and that's his partner, is off on this day. Can you fill in? And I said to my wife, I'm like, oh my God, I have to get up in the morning and do 4 hours. And she's like, you did it for 23 years. Well, you complaining about one day, but it was that one day of thinking, oh my God, I got to get up early and talk for 4 hours. But I ended up could only do two because I had to fly to the playoff game I did, but it was great. It was just great to talk, you know, free form like that again for an extended period of time. So I wouldn't rule that out in the future, somehow, some way, somewhere possibly. I love calling games. Love it. So to be able to do college and pro this year has been a ball.
All right, we're going to get into those jobs, but just to follow up on that. So if the right daily audio/radio spot came up, you would consider that?
Yeah. Oh, I would. Yes. Yes, I would. Partly because I do think I still would love it, and I think my wife would still want me out of the house for a while. So I think it's twofold.
All right, so let's get into this, because I think listeners would be interested in the process of how these jobs that you did this year came to be. And, like, let's just be honest, Mike. The reality is you were a known entity. You had worked at ESPN for, obviously, multiple decades. So people in the business know who you are. That said, ultimately, like, you have to connect with the people who are making or hiring these positions to ultimately do it. So whether it was Learfield or Westwood or Meadowlark, do they approach you or your agent about these positions, or were you actively working to say, okay, I want to be an analyst, I have contacts in the business, I'm going to call these people? I just think because listeners don't really get a sense of how this works, they'd be interested in how it worked.
I was fortunate enough that, you know, I had been just out of it, that people were calling my agent, you know, with opportunities. So now, again, there were some radio opportunities, you know, that I didn't get. You know, Fox, you know, morning radio, they had a slot to fill, and you know, they didn't want me for that, for, you know, whatever reason they want. It's theirs. They went with, you know, I think it's LeVar Arrington and Brady Quinn, who I know, you know both those guys very well, and I hope it's going great for them. So, you know, there were jobs like that where I didn't get a couple of, NFL TV analyst roles, you know, they went different directions, you know, and that's the way it goes. You don't get everything out there. I know a lot of people are like, oh, Golic was this for so many years, they should be able to get any job. It doesn't work that way. You know, it does not work that way. But as far as the jobs I did, yeah, they were people that called my agent, and we kind of sifted through some of them. There were some others as well, and we just kind of decided what we wanted to do that would work best. So yeah, I was fortunate in that way that people were at least at this point seeking me out. We'll see in the future if that happens.
Let's take a couple of these. We'll take them individually and just sort of discuss each of the gigs and what you liked about it. So let's start with the Learfield one. That was a Saturday night college football job. I think if I'm correct, you and Kate basically traveled around the country to do that job. So that's a great opportunity, obviously, to do reps and to do sort of game stuff on a week-by-week basis. At the same time, that's a grind job. You got to travel sort of to different places. I would imagine you guys did, you weren't necessarily doing like the biggest game of the week, let's say. You might do an SEC game or whatever, a Big Ten game. But, again, it's a real – it's sort of a commitment. How did you feel – did you like being back at the in the college atmosphere? Did you like calling those games? I know you called Georgia once, so you got to see the national champions. So that's a cool gig, but at the same time, you know, you're earning your money for that gig, I think.
Well, let me tell you why it didn't feel like as much. Well, with the other stuff I did, it did be kind of, was kind of a grind. But when I first got when I first started in this business at ESPN in 95, I was doing college games, and then I started to do radio and then do studio as well when it was NFL Tonight, not NFL Live, same show, they changed the name. But back then, for 10 years, when I was doing college games, I was also doing radio every morning, and I was doing studio work two or three times a night. So that was what I did now was a breeze compared to radio every single day, studio two or three times, travel on the weekend to do a college game, get back on Sunday and start the whole process over again on Monday. Now I didn't have a daily radio gig. I would do a pod occasionally, and I got to actually see what it was like to just prepare for a football game, you know, not have to do a 4-hour radio show every day or studio work two or three times a week. So in all honesty, now it did get a little more difficult because I had to, you know, back end an NFL game, or usually the NFL game was first. It was a Thursday night game. Then I would do a Saturday night college game. So from a prep standpoint of games, it got to be demanding, but nothing compared to what I was doing from like 95 to 2005 when I was doing all those other things. And let me tell you, working, now, I had never met Kate Scott. I knew she did a lot with the Pac-12. She is fantastic. She is an absolute rising, shooting up star in this business, and got the Philadelphia 76ers gig while we were doing the Saturday game. So then she had to kind of double up a little bit. She is so much fun, and she is so good at her job. And the one thing Learfield, I really, really loved him for, Tom Bowman was the producer that traveled with us. He was fantastic. Richard, they just said, guys, go have fun. I did morning radio forever. She had done some morning radio. We basically wanted to do a radio show that involved a game. I mean, they let us just talk so much non-sports, other sports, football game. I mean, we had a ball. It's as much fun as I've had doing a game. And I loved it because sometimes I think that games can get too, you know, too cookie cutter. Talk about the game, talk about this play, talk about this matchup, which you need to do. But to me, a lot of times there's not enough fun involved as well, because, you know, in the NFL, I know that's their job, but calling the game is still calling a game. In college, man, I don't know if I've had as much fun calling a game where they just let us go. So it was the first time I had done a full slate since probably 2005. So from that standpoint, you're right. It did get to be a bit of a grind, but I mean, we looked forward to our Friday night dinners, our Saturday morning breakfasts, our, you know, even though we were on radio, they had a booth cam that was on YouTube and different things. And so it was, I had a lot of fun doing that. And she is just fantastic, and she is, everybody's going to hear a lot from her going forward.
The NFL job was Thursday Night Football, and then you just did the Bengals Raiders. Are you done now with Westwood One, or do you have one more divisional game?
No, I have more. It was either a Thursday night game, sometimes a Sunday night game that I did. I'm doing the Tampa Bay game, Tampa and the Rams, and I'm also gonna be there for the Super Bowl. I'll probably work sidelines for Westwood One for the Super Bowl. I think Kurt Warner will be in the booth. So yeah, it's amazing because all the years at ESPN when we would go and do our show all week there, I always left on Saturday. I never wanted to stay for the game because I was jealous of those guys. I never got to play in the Super Bowl, and I said, I'm going to go watch from my couch at home. So the first one I'm actually staying for, I'm actually working it. So that's going to be pretty cool.
You'll be really on one of the sidelines. They'll probably have two reporters, I'd imagine, maybe, right?
Probably, but the way they're going, that's what I'm doing this week. They actually want me to kind of practice it. I'm going to be an analyst on the sideline. It's not like the normal sideline thing.
Yep.
So it's going to be like that analyst. So like in this case, I think Ross Tucker will be in the booth. He and I will, you know, go back and forth in the Super Bowl. It'll be me and Kurt Warner kind of going back and forth, you know. So that'll be more like that role on the sideline. So I'm looking forward to it. So get a good little practice trial of it this weekend and then get ready for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I like when they do that. Holly Rowe does that a lot for women's college basketball, where she's not really a sideline reporter. She's sort of this like half analyst, half sideline reporter, which is, to me, is the better way, I think, to ultimately do this because you allow the talent to bring in their own expertise in addition to the reporting. Did when it came to calling games for Westwood One, Mike, I wonder if you experienced this because I've certainly, in writing about this, have seen this a lot. I think people don't realize how many people listen to the NFL on radio, and you're just surprised at people just driving around during Sunday or who just enjoy the radio experience. I'm usually talking about national games, not necessarily local, as opposed to watching it on TV. And I wonder, just from just doing it this year, did you maybe even anecdotally, were you surprised at how many people might have heard you on Westwood One than you might have expected?
Yes, because I'll be honest, Richard, and I've always been this way, even with radio and the amount of people listening or ratings, I didn't care, because the people above me are the ones that dealt with that. And if it got to a position where we were doing really bad and they needed us to change up, they'd let me know, right? But it was always, hey, just keep doing your thing. And my thought had always been, and you're right, I didn't know the audience for Westwood One. I don't know, and I still don't. I don't know how many people are listening to the game, because the way I look at it is there's no need for me to worry about that, because I whether it's one person or 10 million people, I'm going to call it the same way. And I've always felt like I'm talking to one person. That's the way I've always done it, whether it was at ESPN and radio or whether it was calling games. I'm talking to one person out there. But seeing some of the reaction from people, you know, on social media of me doing games, I'm like, wow, I didn't realize. And in all honesty, I still don't. If you ask me, do you know how many people listen to the games? I will say I have zero clue. And I'm fine with that, because, like I said, it doesn't matter. It's not going to change the way I call a game.
Then when it comes to the Meadowlark stuff with Stu Gatz, that gives you, obviously, I feel like, a chance to get a little bit closer to what you did before, right? Like, it's sort of like it's free form. The great thing, as you know, about a podcast is, like, you're not beholden to time. You're not even beholden to, like, you can curse if you want, you know, whatever you want to do. So my sense is that that's probably something you really like, because it gives you a chance to be a little more personality driven, where the games itself, ultimately, you know, with the game broadcast, you have to let us know what is going on in the field in a certain amount of time.
Yeah, the game's going to dictate a lot of what we talk about. Absolutely right.
Right.
In all honesty, the most difficult thing has been, I mean, I did radio for a couple of decades, and you understand you can't swear, you know, and just don't. Now I'm doing podcasts, but I still do radio hits, and on the podcast we obviously swear a little bit, and now I have to think, okay, wait, I'm on radio now, I can't do that, you know, I don't want to get anybody in trouble or anything. So that's been kind of weird. But listen, Stu and I and Dan have been friends for years, for decades. And this really is more with Stupidity. And then we started the pod, God Bless Football, for the football season, which may keep going. And Stu and I have always wanted to work together. You know, when there was going to be a new morning show, and it was Trey and my son, Mike. Yeah. Stu, Jason Fitz, they were in the running to be, you know, in Trey's spot there. It was going to be in me and my son and either Trey or Stu or Jason Fitz. So Stu and my son Mike have done podcasts together as well. Weekend Observations is what they did. They had a ball doing it. Let me just say this, and hopefully more info down the line. Stu and I are going to be working together a lot.
All right.
Forward. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll let you know when all that's going on. But yeah, that could be a fun thing we're looking forward to there.
You know, one of the things, Mike, yeah, I know you still love live radio, and you would, you know, like you said earlier in this podcast, you would take a job if it was the right job. But now, having experienced much more of doing something specifically for a podcast, you also are obviously well enough to, you know, you're aware that you look around and some of the most well-known, successful people are now podcasters. They're not on air. There's obviously still a lot of linear radio people who are successful and have big shows. But, you know, you look at like the Rogans of the world and people like that. I mean, there are tens of millions of people listening. So I wonder, like, what did you learn about the format and yourself in terms of what can be done as a podcaster versus what you did obviously during those years as an ESPN radio host?
I mean, what a different world it is. And I got a lot of this education and doing stuff with Stu and all their group with Stupidity is, you know, I did a 4-hour radio show. It was a 4-hour radio show, right?
Right.
You had live guests. We rarely taped a guest. It was live guests. It was us talking 6 a.m. Eastern till 10 Eastern. And we were done. Podcasting, you know, I'll Stu or one of the guys will hit me up and say, hey, we have Andy Reid coming on. Can you interview him? Can you handle this interview? Because we always have fun back and forth. I don't want Stu on with my friends who are head coaches because he'll screw up my relationship with them and all that. So I'll do that interview and it'll go in a podcast. And I don't necessarily know which week of the podcast. So that's the biggest difference for me is it can be disjointed of what I was used to. Now it's the podcast world. So all the podcasting people are used to this. You do a segment here, a segment there, you edit it all together and you have a podcast where I was used to doing 4 hours straight of radio and TV. And then the show was over. Here, you're always doing something. Like I was talking with Stu, we were talking about doing a podcast with some other people. And it's like, yeah, we can make two out of it. And I'm like, okay, so I'm still learning about this. And I do want to learn more about it because I'm with you. I understand terrestrial radio is certainly taking a bit of a hit from back in when I was doing it years ago. And the podcast world, you have to be with the times. And the podcast world is very popular. So I have been trying to learn more about it. But that's probably the biggest difference is it can be disjointed, but then put together to make it sound flawless, as opposed to, hey, I got 4 hours of live radio and it's going to be what it's going to be.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Oh, a couple more here. How much do you listen to ESPN radio these days?
I pretty much listen to it. It's amazing. Like when I was at Notre Dame, when I stayed there from April to November, now I'm in Arizona. I've gotten caught up again in local news. So I get up in the morning and that's what we'll turn on. We'll turn on that or we'll turn on, you know, Good Morning America or something, or the NBC morning show or something. And we'll watch that because we know later in the day we're going to listen to Mike and Chris Canty. So we listen to them every day. But other than that, I listen to more local and or national, like regular news, to kind of, because I can now and kind of get caught up on everything. So in all honesty, not a whole lot outside of my son and Chris Canty, who I think are doing a nice job together. I've always liked Chris. Chris has done a great job over the years. So I think it's a nice pairing.
I think you would provide some interesting perspective here, having been in the business for such a long time and morphing between doing live games as an analyst and then obviously studio work and certainly radio, obviously. Drew Brees did this week's playoff game, and the sentiment was that he did not have a good game. He sort of had, what's the best way to say it? Not that he wasn't prepared, but that the game felt a little too big for where he is in his broadcast development. As someone who's been in the business for a long time, Mike, I think you'd have great perspective on this. One, how hard is it to sort of do that kind of job, to walk into a playoff game in front of 30 million people, and even if you're as famous as Drew, to sort of deliver the kind of broadcast you want? And then secondly, and this may be more interesting to me, is we live in such a world now, a 24/7 social media world, where like you sort of get tagged very quickly as like a certain broadcaster, even though like in any other profession, you would get time to get better at your profession. It's sort of, and maybe I'm guilty of writing it too, it sort of happened to Witten. People made a decision on Jason Witten after his first couple games, Monday Night Football, and that was that. But the reality is, like, Drew Brees will be a better broadcaster his 20th game than he will be his first game, in the same way I was a better writer in my 20th year writing than I was in my first year. How do you look at all this stuff as someone who sort of lived it?
The one thing I'll say is, and I think I said this to you before, I certainly said it to others, the one thing that benefited Greeny and I, in all honesty, when we started in 2000, is nobody was listening to us. I mean, we
you're right. Seriously.
Again, for people that don't remember, when the morning show started at ESPN, I actually did it with Tony Bruno. We were in one market. That was Chicago. We weren't cleared
That's
everywhere.
Right. That's right.
But then we started gaining more and more affiliates. We weren't even carried in Hartford, you know, which is obviously, you know, the city,
the whole market,
right, exactly. So our bosses couldn't even hear us. So we literally would go through the first year or two, and we made mistakes, and we kind of found our way. So if it was Mike and Mike just starting today, we would get instant feedback, probably very critical feedback, because we just started. I had never done it before. Greeny had never done it before, and they threw us together, and we had time to work through all our mistakes and work through things. You don't get that today. That's why I said, you know, the new show, I talked to you about it, the new show with Keyshawn and Jay Will, and now it's Max, but it was Zubin then. I mean, they were thrown in front of hundreds of affiliates, didn't get a ton of time to practice together, and then had instant feedback on it anyway, because it's a social media world. I mean, I wish it wouldn't happen to people. I wish it wouldn't happen to them. I wish it had happened differently for them. But that's the reality today when you put a show together, is you're going to get instant feedback. So now take it into the booth. So with analysts, we know what's going to happen. And sometimes companies sit there and try and say, oh, we're not taking people because of their names. That's bull. They do. They take the stars. I get it. I understand it. I understand that they do that. So what happened? You know what happened? Is Tony Romo came right off the field, went right in a booth. And what was he? Instant, right? I mean, oh my God, he's calling plays. He's having a ball. What a personality. So the thought process is, bring in these guys right off the field. And look, Romo was able to do it. So that's what they're trying to recreate, a la the quarterback, the rookie quarterback who has that good year. It's tough, man. That, you know, when Drew started doing the Notre Dame games, people would tweet at me, what do you think? Go like, I said, listen, I'm not judging a guy when he just starts. I mean, he's a walk-in Hall of Famer, but he's now in a different world of learning timing and everything that goes with a TV broadcast, which he'll learn. He'll learn in time, just what you said. You know, your first and then your 100th, there's a different person involved. But unfortunately, you get judged early, and then you get tagged with that. You're supposed to be great at this. Man, that's unfair, but you know what? You know, unfair, fair doesn't come into play. You know, you're gonna get that opportunity, and you're gonna be judged immediately on it.
You know, it's a little different today. You're right, because somebody like Drew Brees is obviously, they're gonna use him in very prominent spots. But there is something to what happened in the '90s, to early 2000s, of being on the fourth or fifth team and just working your way up. Like, people don't forget, Troy Aikman was not on Fox's number one team to start. He had at least a season and a half. I think he might have even done World League Football, where he just got the reps of being in the booth. And then became obviously a top analyst. Romo is a unicorn. It's just, it's for every Romo, there's going to be 25 people who are not Tony Romo. It just.
Well, no, I agree with you. But again, that's why I go to the owner and the rookie quarterback. They think it should be that guy. And they're going to put the stars in those prominent positions right out of the gate. You're right. That day is gone where you can learn a little bit. They're not going to start in the fourth or fifth team. They're not going to start on a smaller show. They're going to get thrown right into the mix and they're going to have to see what happens. And it is absolutely unfair to judge in the beginning. I didn't answer those people, or I would say, I'm not judging him on his first couple of games. Let him get some games under his belt.
Yeah, you're right. And this is where the finances come in too. If someone's paying you multiple millions of dollars, they're not putting
exactly
you on the number four team. I mean, that's just
right. That's exactly
it's
right.
It's a business. All right, here's the last one I want to ask you about, which is interesting to me, because when I knew you were the podcast guest, I wanted to just get into this a little bit. And it's gambling. And in today's world, Mike, if you and Mike Greenberg were doing Mike and Mike, let's say right now in 2022, forget about like if you were on the air for 20 or 30 years, like you're a prominent morning show host on ESPN National, gambling would be part of the show, either as a sponsor or you would do some kind of segment where you are talking about the odds for games or how the odds became of this game. That was not the case when you obviously first started your mic and mic run. So I have two parts where I want to go. Here's the first part of this. One, what do you think of that? Just what is, as someone who was in the seat for such a long time, if you had the seat now, or anybody who has this similar seat heading forward, like, gambling is going to be a gigantic content play in the way you might have an interview with Jerry Rice or something like that.
Without question. My thought on that is adapt or die. You know, I mean, listen, Greeny and I went up through the times where, you know, we got faxes from people. The old fax paper would fall behind the fax machine and you're digging out to instant, you know, like this, hate this in social media. So you have to adapt to it and you have to become part of social media. You know, I have close to 800,000 followers. Greeny has over 1 million. Trey had over 1 million. So, I mean, you have to adapt to that, because this is where we're going. If you don't do that with gambling, you're right. We would try and sneak in this snide comment about gambling or undertones, like Al Michaels would do in a broadcast or something, you know, where now it's kind of like NIL, you know, the money going out in college used to be under the table and everybody was in hushed tones. Now that same money is on top of the table and we can talk about it. So that's now gambling in the NFL. Hell, Tony Romo, remember when he got told by the NFL you can't have a fantasy draft in Vegas, and it wasn't even at a casino, and now the NFL is embracing betting and gambling. Listen, I have a deal with DraftKings now, so I'm going to do stuff for them. So to your point, you better involve it in your show, and it better be more than one segment, and you have to become – that was my fear when I was going to do something with DraftKings or start to do more gambling, and this is how I would have treated it on air – is I need to learn more about it. And then what I was told was, no, you don't have to. I'm never going to be an expert in gambling. I need to be me, because people want to hear me break down what a game is like, and that can then influence how they choose a game. But I still need to know the basics of it, maybe even a little more. And I do now. And you have to. So any host out there has to start to understand more and more of the gambling, because if you shun it, people are just going to tune somewhere else. So I guess it's like anything new coming along that's here to stay, and gambling is, it's adapt or die.
All right, well, I'm glad you brought that up. And actually, this will be the last part, and I'm glad you sort of mentioned the DraftKings thing. I didn't know the background of that. My thought would have been, like Trey, like Kenny Mayne, like some others, you would have been a perfect person to be what these places sort of call a brand ambassador, where you're the face or one of the faces of the brand. No one is expecting you to break down the odds of, like, you know, the Masters or something like that, but they want you to talk about whatever the sports are. And then within that, people get excited about it. You can point them to how they would join this service or bet on this service. So are you, like, do you have a formal role with DraftKings? And if so, what is it?
Listen, you know, with Caesars, Trey, you see what he does on social media. He kind of gives you a team's trends or this or that, gives you great info there. What I'm going to do, I'll go a little more on the field, because that's where I was. Talk more about matchups and what I see as favorable or unfavorable matchups in what I see in a game, to maybe help people along with, okay, well, I'm going to use that as part of my information on maybe how I bet on this game. So, and that's what, you know, where my first thought was, oh my God, I have to learn everything about gambling. They were like, no, you don't. We hired you to be you. You know, be interactive, you know, have fun with everybody. But my job also is to break down games and individual matchups and why I think this passing game is going to work against this pass defense, or rush defense is going to stop this running game, which will, again, add to people's information on how they're going to place a bet on this game. So that I'm still going to be my analyst, but now it could be used in a different role. And I'm really, really looking forward to it. So
when does that start?
Probably for these divisional games, or if not for the championship games, and certainly while football is going on, without a doubt.
So, and then lastly, and I imagine you're going to agree with me here, what people have been writing about in my space, and seems very, very clear, is these places, the Caesars, the DraftKings, they are eventually going to land a traditional news breaking journalist, a Schefter, a Woj, a Jeff Passan. It just seems Now, there's obviously a larger conversation about that. How do the leagues feel about that? Can they still get the same information? But would you agree that at a certain point, these kind of places, the places like you're working for at DraftKings, they're eventually going to morph from personalities, analysts like yourself, into at least getting a newsbreaker because of the value of information? You buy that, that someone's going to eventually jump?
Yes. And I'll take it a step further that some of these places are going to end up having networks of their own.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So, yes, it is not walking in that direction. It is running in that direction.
Just so too much. They have too much money for that not to have happened, not to sort of be bigger content players.
The money's crazy out there. So they're going to grab as much as they can, whether it's insiders, whether it's analysts, whether it's brand ambassadors. And like I said, they're not just going to stay in that. Those places, the gambling places, are going to even evolve to try and take up more space in this area as well.
Yeah, 100% agreed, 100%. Mike Golic, again, some of these jobs may continue, some may not, but at the moment, Westwood One NFL analyst. He just said he's doing the Super Bowl, be on the sidelines, a little bit of news there. He did Learfield College football games this year with Kate Scott, and a shout out to Kate, who, like Mike said, is a massive rising star. He's doing work with Stu Gatz on some Meadowlark podcasts, and as Mike said, look for that partnership to continue heading forward. And he's got his weekly spot on Peacock with Mike Florio. Listen, Mike, things are going well for you. This is good news, man. I'm very happy to see this. Not that anybody should have been crying that Mike Golic is no longer at ESPN. That said, you know, you want to see people who like have a connection with the audience and who love what they do continue to succeed heading forward. And I think you're just a great example that like life does not end like when you leave the 860, like you and Kenny Mayne and Trey Wingo and Josina Anderson, Dan Patrick. I mean, the list at this point is super long, and it's good to see because I think it's even good for young people to realize that, like, you know, once you leave a place, maybe that was your dream place, like it's not the end of your career. There's another career.
There is.
So that's cool to say.
It was a great place to work for a number of years, but there are other entities out there as this sports world grows, as we just talked about, for other opportunities. So, the opportunities are out there. It's just a matter of finding them and continue to do what I love to do.
Great. Mike, you're always good to give me some time. Continued success. Thanks for coming on today to the Sports Media Podcast.
No problem, Richard. No problem at all.
All right. As I said at the top, he really doesn't need any introduction. If you are an NFL fan, you know who Jay Glazer is. You've seen him on Fox NFL Sunday. I mean, he can tell you how long it is, but it feels like he's been on that show since like 1932. I'm sure it's not 1932, Jay. But you can catch him, obviously. He's, you know, when you think of sort of the people who are, you know, the at the top of the line when it comes to the insiders in the NFL, Jay Glazer's name is always going to be there. He is here for his football stuff, but more than that, he's the author of Unbreakable, How I Turned My Depression and Anxiety into Motivation. And you can too. That book's available on Amazon as well as any other place you buy books. It's already an Amazon bestseller. And if you follow Jay on Twitter, you know that Jay is very, very honest and frank when it comes to mental health, his own issues with depression and anxiety. And he's got a little community now, or not a little, a big Twitter community who checks in with him every day for sort of his mental health message of the day. And I'm pleased to be joined by Jay Glazer of Fox Sports. Jay, how are you?
Doing good, man. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good.
Wait, hold on a sec.
Go ahead,
Jay. By the way, it ain't fucking 1932.
All right, Jay, you're already producing this podcast. So I see the New York in you has not left. It's good.
2004, my first year of Fox. 2004.
2004? All right, that's pretty good. I like that. So I listened in doing my preparation. I listened to the an interview you did maybe a couple days ago with Dan Patrick. It was either a couple days ago or last week. And something that you said to him really struck me. It was pretty interesting. And you're talking about how you've been exploring your mental health for a long period of time. And that was sort of part of the reason you wrote this book in terms of the exploration, in terms of why, where on the surface, you had all these materialistic great things. Amazing job. You're making, obviously, a ton of money. You have a very influential social circle. But when you hit the pillow at night, man, those first 15 minutes were really, really tough. As the son of a therapist and someone who certainly believes massively in therapy, most people have no idea who suffers from anxiety, who suffers from depression. It is undercounted to the extreme because so many people are afraid to talk about it. And I really appreciate and admire, Jay, that you've now put this out in this book. So it gets to the larger question of why did you feel at this point in your life it was time to write this book, to pen this stuff?
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people have been trying to get me to write football books over the years. I'm like, nah, I'm not really interested in doing any sort of tell-all or anything like that, right? And part of my own, what gets me through my gray, and it's funny, for a long time, man, and you've known me forever, my friends in Australia and all those guys and Howie, they'd say, oh, Jay's crazy. And there's a kind of a badge of honor in sports and mixed martial arts, my other sport and football. It's a little badge of honor to be crazy, at least somewhat. But the crazy actually came from pain. And I've always lived in it. And we never talked about mental health in the past. We just talked about crazy. And now I'm like for me, one of the things that gets me through my gray, I call it the gray. So I have a depression, anxiety, and it's been there since my earliest memory. Like, I don't know how it's like not to feel this way. And I don't know if that's, I know my grandmother suffered from it. My mother suffered. So I don't know if it was something that's been handed down or there's some childhood trauma, whatever it is. That's the only way I've known to think about myself. And as a result, the name of the book is Unbreakable, How I Use My Depression and Anxiety to Motivate Me. And you can too. I've always used, because I have not understood how to like this person or love this person from the inside out. You talked about all the stuff that I've done in my social circles and my jobs. In my mind, it motivated me to go do these great things so I could maybe get some love from the outside in. And, you know, part of my thing to get through the gray is to be of service and being able to use my own gray to get people through their own darkness. That's a way of being a service. So I'm like, man, I'm doing it. You know, these are things that I have my foundation, MVP, Emerging Vets and Players, where I've been very open and transparent to our combat vets and our ex-athletes and our football players and our fighters and all that. And I'm like, man, these are in closed circles. It's time to give it to the rest of the world because I know it's helped them. And the more I can help others, the more it's going to get me through that gray. And listen, the gray for me, Richard, it absolutely sucks, man. It is every morning I wake up and I am just waiting for the sky to fall and all this good stuff that I have to get pulled away and think, man, the universe is just going to collapse around me. And it's not the truth, but I'm not able to comprehend it because that's what the roommates in my head tell me. And I have to do all this stuff in the morning just to get myself out of bed because it's that much pain. And when I do get out of bed, then I'm like, okay, now I'm going to be relentless. I'm going to be unbreakable. I'm going to go for it. Now that I got out of bed, I'm going to go for it. And I just know that, you know, the world is seen through an unauthentic lens these days. Like, social media is full of shit. Like, we're comparing ourselves to everybody else's filtered fraction of a second. It ain't fucking real. But how are we not supposed to think our lives suck when we're comparing ourselves to everybody else's filtered fraction of a second? And then, by the way, hearing all this bad stuff or reading all this bad stuff on Twitter, the human condition is not meant for it. And just because I have money now or you have fame or something like that doesn't mean that my feelings ain't going to hurt. It does. Like, if more so, I'm probably more sensitive than most. My sensitivity has helped me get to where I am. So, yeah, I want to be real authentic with people out there and be a voice for them to show them they ain't alone. We need to start being more real with each other or else this world's going to go through an even harder place. And the title Unbreakable, it's never more applicable. I mean, we're coming through a pandemic and it did not break us as a world.
Jay, have you ever did some self-examination about why you entered such a hyper masculinity testosterone world? Because we're in a much better place in 2022 where people in professional athletes will absolutely talk about mental health. Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan, a lot of people out there who've they've broken that, if you want to call it a taboo. But I wonder if you ever have thought about, man, like, you know, I could have been a school teacher. I could have been a doctor. I could have been this. But you went into world where for such a long time, you know what I mean? It was like verboten to talk about any of this stuff.
So here's the thing. I went into the world of athletics, especially like fighting. I like for me, I felt like such a dumb kid. I was in remedial English. I'm not, you know, I have depression, anxiety, and ADD. So I got to, you know, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it big.
Triple, you're Russell Westbrook,
gonna,
triple right, double there.
I'm going to have it all. So I always felt like a dumb kid. So for me, fighting for me was like, okay, well, that's the place I belong. But the messed up part was I had such little self-worth. I used to go into a cage to lose. Like, that's what I felt. That's what I felt I deserved. How fucked up is that? I'm going to go in a cage and let people kick me in my head and elbow me and slam me. And I'm going in with the idea of I'm going to lose. Well, it wasn't until I started coaching guys and getting around some of the Warriors that are my teammates now, the Randy Couture's and the Chuck Liddell's, where I started to see that doesn't have to be my story and doesn't have to be my narrative. But for a while, it's just where I felt like I belong, in this cage. And as far as football, I was just a football fan. And I got to say this, it's going to sound weird, but look, you know, I kind of grew up, I was always tiny. I was kind of the runt. The world of football and fighting, I found a lot of love in there. And you see how loyal I am to my guys and my crew. And, you know, I've done it differently. And, you know, I was the first, me and Len Pasquarelli were the first minute-by-minute breaking news guys in this country in 99 on that internet thing when I, you know, when it came out. I think it's going to catch on, by the way. And it'd be like me versus Clayton and Pasquarelli and Mort jumped in. Like, we were the first ones to do this. I couldn't, like, for me, that community of all these people in the world of sports, it was loving to me. They accepted me. They loved me. They didn't frown on me, or at least the roommates in my head were more comfortable getting along when I'm around that group. So loyalty for me with this group is huge, because I think they saved my life. And I'm now in turn able to use a lot of the shit I talk about with them to save other people.
Jay, because this sort of, this has happened during the course of your adult life, this change. What do you make of the fact that in 2022, athletes, particularly male athletes, can come out and speak about depression, anxiety, things that the pressures that they feel on a daily basis, where, you know, when we were first starting out in our professions, like, again, this didn't happen. If people did come out, they would get accused of being, you know, soft, mentally not strong. I think women have been far ahead of men in this, in terms of they've been more open and honest. And again, like, even today, though, like, Naomi Osaka will talk about how she feels mentally. She need, you know, like, she'll need, like, she needs to get away from the sport. And there's still yokels out there who are saying she's soft, she's not tough. But I will say we're in a better place. It feels like we're in a better place in 2022. And I love your perspective on the fact that, again, even in the NFL, I'm not surprised anymore when a guy comes out and sort of talks honestly about, hey, like, I need to get away from practice right now because I'm not in a good headspace. This stuff was never talked about in the 60s or 70s.
It wasn't so talked about the way you're thinking. But think about it. Simone Biles and Michael Jordan, they said the same thing when they stepped away, right? Like, hey, what's your favorite time? Well, my off days. Both talked about the weight of the world being on their shoulders, right? But Michael Jordan didn't talk about it this way. But the difference, too, and I think why we're all talking about it now, is because of social media, because it makes us feel so bad. And it gets us to cave in on such a different level now. I think people now, they're breaking and talking about it, which makes them unbreakable in my mind, right? Where we're now opening up about it. And yeah, I think, again, I started talking about it because I know that I see how much it was helping our vets and some of these players. But like, for me, no one's questioning my manhood. Right? So I could cry on the drop of a dime. No one's questioning my shit. No one's going to call me soft because I start crying here about this. And that's how it was.
Yeah. Same thing with DeMar DeRozan or some of these other guys.
It isn't like my vulnerability is what makes me strong, but it's the vulnerability that really makes me very strong. And that's where I think the fact that, you know, doing a book like this, I'm trying to get that conversation out more to get people. And I know we're saying like, it's okay not to be okay, but like, I'm fucked up, but I'm good with my fucked upness. And I want everybody else to be also. Right.
Yeah, that's a really good perspective on it. I want to ask one more thing about your use of social media. You know, one of the things in looking at your Twitter feed that I've really been impressed by, one, you're incredibly honest on it, which I think is always, or authentic, maybe is the better word, which is always important. I mean, there's always performative on Twitter, but you're authentic, and that to me is really important. But you have had stories where people, strangers, right, have contacted you who have said, hey, Jay, I've seen this. You'll run into like a person, let's say in your real life, who says, hey, Jay, I happen to have actually followed you on Twitter. You said this about mental health, and it really helped me that day. It really impacted me. I wonder if you could just share a couple of those stories, because it's pretty amazing how we have a big circle, but yet it's really a small circle sometimes.
The book is coming out January 25th, and I told my crew, listen, we got a lot of stuff in here. Like, I don't want to wait, because they're like, hey, you got to wait. And I'm like, I don't want to wait, because they're all saying, you're going to change the world. You're going to change the world. You're going to do this. I don't know if I'm a changer or a saver, but as one of my friends, Kirstie Ennis, will say, we're damn sure going to improve it together. But I don't want to wait. Like, every day we're not putting stuff out. It's a day that somebody, I could help someone. So they said, okay. And I said, listen, I'm just going to start doing this in real time to show people what it's really like. Not the filtered bullshit. This is what it's really like. And like the days that I wake up and I'm in this gray and I can't get out of bed, I don't know. Like, this thing plays by its own set of rules. I don't know when that's going to happen. The days I have anxiety attacks on set, which is a lot, when you all don't even know about. Like, I don't, and I call it wrestling with my abuser. Like, I don't know when that's going to happen. But I got to fight back. So, yeah, I decided to do this and just be like, hey, this is the real stuff. Because we all talk about, people say mental health, they talk, but they don't describe it. They don't, you know, and I describe it in this book. And again, I use my contacts in the book. And I don't know if you've read it yet, but the way I talk about the gray, it was a conversation that I had with Sean McVay last year, with me and Andrew Whitworth, who lives in this shit also, which is what gets him to still run out of the football field at 40 years of age and do the stuff he does to his body. And we're trying to explain it to Sean, who doesn't fully get, like, man, Sean's like, he's like a nightlight. His parents are like the people that you would see in like the picture frames you buy. Like, you know, the worst thing that ever happened to him is he lost the Super Bowl in his second year as head coach. And I was like, Sean, every one of your people, every one of your players, man, they got it. Like, you can't be great and not be crazy, right? But if you could really understand it, think how much better of a coach you'll be. And he said, well, how many players on my team you think have it? I said, actually, the bigger question is, how many of your secretaries, how many of your personnel people, how many of your scouts, how many of your assistant coaches, how many? And I explain it to him in detail, and he's allowed me to repeat the story in great detail because of how many people it'll help. And that's why, and he's like, people may not understand it. So this year he calls me, and just in the middle of the year, he goes, hey man, like, I really get it now. Like, I really understand it. And it was just a whole bunch of things that in the past, I think he probably wouldn't have been vulnerable with himself. Cause as these dudes, you're just taught to just march on and march on. And the funny thing is, in part of the book, I'm also show how I train our football players and our fighters in MMA. And I'm like, you don't show it. We don't ever show it. Neutral face. We don't put our hands on our hips. We don't take a stool in between rounds. We're relentless. Yet in the real world, I want everybody to show it all, tell it all, because then we can connect. So sorry, this is the long version of your answer. But there's been, since I started doing that and just being real about it, I'm trying not to cry over here, but I've had a lot of people reach out. And here I go, I'm starting to cry. A lot of people reach out saying that they were going to kill themselves. And because of these posts, they're now going to go get help. Or they're going to turn to someone. And like, I've tried to get people to understand, man, this has made me so much closer to my friends. I've gotten them to understand me. And I don't have to hide and suffer in silence anymore. And it's made me so much better. Probably a better friend too, because I was in so much pain. I was doing a lot of bad. I was having outbursts and you know, you don't know why, but I'm a lot of it is fear. And it's been a huge relief that I have these teammates now where I could walk this walk with them. And like, you know, you bring up these other stories. I mean, yesterday, I'm in LA and I leave my gym, Unbreakable, and I'm driving down the street and I come to a light and a woman is in the next car over And she sees me, does a double take and says, oh my, I can't believe you're here. I was like, hi. And she just said, because of your posts, that's why I'm driving right now. I said, huh? And she said, thank you so much for your post on mental health. That's why I'm out driving right now. Where she was stuck in this gray, I guess, and isolating and wanted to make sure that she went out, and she went out for the whole day. And, you know, she's like, I can't believe you're here right now. Thank you. And I said, hey, thank you for telling me that. And I said, you never know what lies around next Tuesday. So keep fighting back, because something magnificent may happen to you next Tuesday or the following Tuesday or the following Tuesday. Right. And you just never know what lies around next Tuesday. And thank you. She said, no, thank you. Like, you're the one who got me out of my house today. And then I posted it. And it turns out someone who works in the business, which I didn't know, was like, oh my God. But that's what I'm saying. You got all these teammates right there next to you that you could actually lean on and walk this walk together with. And that's why I want us all to kind of gravitate and lean on each other. And if I didn't have this depression, anxiety, I would not be where I am. So I'm not going to let my depression, anxiety leave me in a room with a revolver in my mouth. I'm not going to do that. Like, I will not do that to everybody else, no matter how bad my pain is. But what has done is it motivated me to go do bigger things in search of trying to figure out how to love myself from the inside out.
I have one more on this, and then we'll just end on a quick football note. You mentioned that you've had anxiety attacks, panic attacks on the set of Fox NFL Sunday. I wonder if you could just share either a story or what that's been like and how you were able to, you know, this is a live show. So how you were able to sort of persevere and go on the air when something like this is happening. And again, as someone, it's been a long time. It was a flight to the Beijing Olympics in 2008, but I had a panic attack flying out of New York to Beijing. And so, like, I know firsthand, like, how debilitating that could be. You think you're going to die. And so, like, I wasn't going on set that day. Nothing else. I was in an airplane. There were some doctors around. They helped me out. Eventually gave me a Xanax and I fell asleep. This is a different situation for you. You know, you got to be on the air at 12:45 ET. So what happens?
Man, I call it wrestling with my abuser. And you'll read in the book how often it happens. Way more than it doesn't. And I don't know why, because I'm great in chaos, man. Like, I thrive in a cage. I'm great. I'm comfortable. Wrestling Andrew Whitworth or Lane Johnson, I'm fine, which I should not be, but I'm fine. On TV, I'm great. I'm fine. It's chaos. It's whoa. I suck in calm. So a lot of times I'll cause chaos when it doesn't need to be caused, because I don't, because I'm not comfortable in the calm yet. I'm working on it. But I don't know. This started in 2005 for me out of nowhere. No idea why, no clue. But like you said, you feel like you're gonna die. So every time it happens to me, I feel like I'm gonna die and it's gonna happen on camera and the whole world's gonna see it, right? And so I have a whole thing that I do, and I wrestle with my abuser while it happens. And one of the things that I do all the time, like in the book, because I talk about really heavy shit in the book, but I also make you laugh the whole time. And I have a whole chapter in there about practical jokes and laughter, because the gray hates laughter. So you'll see me on Fox NFL Sunday all the time trying to get a quick joke out or laugh about something. A lot of times it's actually to get me out of these anxiety or panic attacks that I'm having. And it's a really consistent thing. And my the co-author said to me, well, how come you don't tell your guys? I said, it's not their problem. Like, I want them to enjoy the show. Like, this ain't Jimmy Johnson's problem. This ain't Howie Long's problem. This ain't straight. This is like, I want them to enjoy it. So, but she's like, but you're kind of going against your own thing about, like, make sure you open up. I said, yeah, but in this case, I want them to enjoy it. So I'd rather fight it myself and figure out. So I laugh as fast as I can. That gets me through it. And do breath work in between sets, in between at commercial breaks and stuff. But even like, when I was doing Ballers, which is not live. And I know I could stop down anytime I want and do it again. It would happen there. It's just, I don't know why it happened in 2005 on. But the one thing I could tell you this, and I didn't realize it until I did the sit down with Lane Johnson. Cause I said, Lane, what's your kind of advice for some people who are going to listen? He said, you know what? Journal everything. And I said, holy shit. what I realized is since I wrote the book, I have not had one anxiety panic attack on camera, not one. And I didn't realize it till he told me it in that moment. So it's been 2005 to now, almost 20 years straight of them. And I had no, and then he said, I'm like, oh my God. So for anybody listening to this, yeah, journal it, journal your stuff. And it's something that helped me that I didn't know was had helped me. And that's the great part of this also about the thing I'm doing with social media now. And with this is like, I'm constantly getting new teammates and like, we're in this together. I'm not your therapist. I'm not your teacher. I'm not your clergy. I don't got the answers. Like, I'm just a damaged, fucked up dude who's trying to learn to get some love from the inside out. So I'm willing to listen to anybody's ideas and then be the communicator for everybody else for things that help us.
I appreciate you sharing that with me. Thank you. The last thing is, it's a hard segue, but I want to switch to a football media topic because you are really like a perfect person to ask this. There's been a lot of sort of talk within the industry, Jay, of these gambling companies, you know, the DraftKings and Caesars. Eventually, they'll move from having like brand ambassadors, former ESPN types to sort of come on and talk about football and, you know, say, hey, here, go sign up for this, our service, to newsbreakers, a Schefter type, a Wojnarowski type, a Glazer type, where they want to get in the game against the traditional places like ESPN, Fox Sports, NBC Sports, et cetera. You obviously have a great job. You know, you're like, think of you as like a Aikman and Collinsworth and Romo. There's only a few handful of these number one insider jobs. So no one's discounting that you have one of the best jobs in the world for what you do. That said, I just wanted to get your take on one. Do you think this is going to eventually happen? And two, how tempting would it be if one of these places said, Jay, we want to build an entire content around your information and I'm just gonna make this up. Like, we'll pay you $20 million a year.
Now you're bringing out $20 million a year. Oh, that's crazy.
Right. But I'm saying like what these places can offer is liquid, is money. Like that's going to be their advantage over the old school legacy places. So I wonder just how you see this, because I think everybody believes within the next year or two, a major player is going to jump to one of these places. And I think the average fan's going to be like, wow, this guy's not at ESPN anymore. He's now at DraftKings, Caesars, or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, look, things change a lot. Right. And, again, when I said I did the minute-by-minute breaking news in 90, starting in 99, everything was newspapers back then. So when Pat Carelli and I started doing this, a lot of newspaper guys were like, hey, fuck you. Like, they're sending something in for the back page for the next day, and then we're breaking at 10 o'clock the night before. So things change. I don't know how this is going to change. I know they're going to be big players. I think for me, though, I need a team. I don't, you know, it'd be hard for me to jump somewhere as myself somewhere. Like I think we're the first family of football, right? Fox NFL Sunday, we're the only sports show in the TV Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I mean, you're the most watched in your window basically for almost 30 years. It's almost unheard of.
That's a team for me. And we're all the best at what we do. We got six of us on the show and 18 personalities between the six of us. Obviously, I got nine of those. But you know, for me, that's what's like, that's a lot of liquidity for me is like, man, when we're together, like our crew at Fox NFL Sunday, when we're together, we freaking have so much fun. We love each other so much. We laugh our asses off so much. And that comes through in camera and people are like, you guys are really like it. Oh yeah. This is really us.
Yeah. Well, you were, am I right about this? I hope I have this. Menifee's best man at his wedding? Something like
Menifee's
that, right?
And, man, we're best man at each other's weddings. There's been a lot of weddings with us. We're godfather of each other's kids. I'm godfather's family has twins, by the way. One of them. Like, who does that? I said, something happens to you. The other one, she's on her own. So, like, one of them. But, no, we've all taken care of each other over the years. We got such a special thing. I was telling one of our guys, man, they should do a last dance on us. Like, they didn't like it. Nothing like this is ever going to happen again. And, you know, just the personalities that we've had. And, I mean, think about it too. Like, Strahan's the king of daytime TV. Are you kidding me? He just went to space. Like, are you kidding me? But, man, like, we've all, they're all Hall of Famers. Every one of them.
They'll never be in our whatever you think of Fox NFL Sunday or any of these other shows. The one thing I can tell you is, no, there will never be another show, NFL show in our lifetime, that will go that many years straight with that same exact cast. It'll never happen again. It's just that in modern television, with executives and people who, you know, Jay, they're very quick to not to change. They don't want to give chemistry time. Your Fox NFL Sunday, like Inside the NBA, in many ways, it will never happen again. Cannot, in my opinion, will never be duplicated. Not in our lifetime.
And it's exactly right. And that's why, for me, like, it took an awful lot to leave something like that. So, but what is the business eventually going to change? Yeah, things change. So, and then, like, especially with the kind of money that they're probably going to throw around, I think you're going to, you're right. Once somebody does it, then it makes it okay for others to do it. So it just opens things up.
Yep. Yeah. But again, you know, like I said, the job that you have is, I look at it the same way. Like I look at Aikman, Romo, Collinsworth, et cetera. It's, these are essentially, there's four people in the world who have the job, and you got to be careful about not giving it up, basically, and you know, unless it's really the reason. All right, Jay Glazer is the author of Unbreakable, How I Turned My Depression and Anxiety into Motivation, and you can too. He's selling a book, and he's obviously going to do a book tour, but man, I can't think of a more important topic in the world than people having the confidence and the freedom and just the peace of mind to speak about their own mental health troubles. The world would be in such a better place if these stigmas were knocked out. And I do think, Jay, what you're doing really helps that, particularly with men, particularly probably men of your age and generation. So I appreciate your time. I really wish you the best of luck with the book. And thanks so much for your honesty today. I appreciate that.
I appreciate that much. Thank you, dude. Appreciate it a lot.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Mike Golick and Jay Glazer. That was a great podcast. Both guys really were interesting and brought just something really, really unique to this episode. I can't thank both enough, and really appreciate Jay Glazer's honesty when it comes to mental health. As I mentioned in the podcast, my mom, my late mom, it was a in addition to being a college professor, a psychologist, and that's just has been a very important part of all my family's life. She had a counseling practice, and mental health was something talked about in our family a lot. We're big believers in therapy, and so I appreciate Jay Glazer and what he had to say. If you like these kind of conversations and podcasts, head to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch archives page. You will find something I think that you like. Leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That's how this podcast continues. The episode prior to this, The Future of Hockey Reporting with Michael Farber, ESPN's Emily Kaplan, Michael Russo, and Fluto Shinzawa, both those last guys of The Athletic. That was a really interesting conversation on where hockey reporting is and where it's going. Before that, the MLB Network Let's Go of Ken Rosenthal, and Will Urban Meyer Get Hired with Britt Giroli and Chad Finn. For that, a conversation on John Madden's legacy with his last producer, Sunday Night Football executive producer Fred Godelli. Ryan Clark, one of the episodes before that, the ESPN NFL analyst. We had James Andrew Miller on the history of HBO, HBO Sports. Rebecca Lowe, Mike Breen, and Ian Eagle came on together to talk about calling NBA basketball. Pam Oliver of Fox Sports on her amazing career. You will find things in the archives that I think you'll appreciate. My thanks to Patrick Antonetti for putting this podcast together. Thanks to everybody at Cage 13. And thanks, of course, to you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.